In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a great chat with Michael Holstrom, the CEO of STEMpunks. That's STEM as in science, technology, engineering, maths, in case that wasn't clear in the audio format. Now, STEMpunks provides immersive STEM programs for students and teachers from grade 1 to 12, and through their programs, enables creative and entrepreneurial thinking to inspire tomorrow's innovators. In this episode, Michael and I discuss his background as an engineer and in technology commercialization and startup development, as well as what sparked his interest in the smart community space. Michael then explains how STEMpunks came to be and why real-world application of STEM skills is so important, not just learning the code in isolation. We share our thoughts on buzzwords and acronyms like STEAM, but why STEM is the foundation. Michael tells us what STEMpunks does, both in the education and home market space, and how this has shifted this year due to COVID. We discuss technology as an enabler for humans and the importance of lifelong learning and the mindset shifts we need in order to think more holistically and change the narrative of what STEM actually is. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trend of AI, artificial intelligence, and the ethical and philosophical conversations that are needed now that the technology is here, as well as some of Michael's favorite resources. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
This episode was brought to you by our sponsors, TPL Connect. TPL Connect are specialists in the design and delivery of smart city and IoT technology projects. Offering consulting, design, and project management services, their strength is their ability to deliver your project vision and not a compromised one. They do this by working with you in the early stages of feasibility to detail your project vision, objectives, requirements, and scope. Then work with you to deliver the project through to completion and handover. Their team take the stress out of designing and delivering technically difficult projects by working on your behalf to deliver the original requirements and objectives of the project. TPL Connect, your project vision delivered. Hello, Michael. How are you today?
I'm great, Zoe. How are you?
I am fabulous. I've just come back from a camping trip and digital break, so I am feeling refreshed and ready to go. But This isn't about me. This is about you. So let's jump straight in. Can you tell us about your background and what you are passionate about?
Yeah, sure. So my background, I've spent about 15 years of my life in innovation, technology, commercialization. Actually an engineer back in the day, but got into business development and startup very early on. So I've gone through building a lot of really great global companies, some horrible companies too. And I guess that all came into what I do today, which is being the CEO of a company called STEMpunks Ventures.
Yes, love it. And we recently had a conversation for your STEMpunks magazine, which was super fun. Again, enough about me. What sparked your interest in this smart community space or the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, look, STEMpunks has always been about trying to take real world problems of the future, and then apply STEM skills for kids and adults to try to solve those problems with. So I think, you know, smart communities, smart cities, to me, I think there's a growing need to start looking at how we build our cities, how we live our lives. I think COVID-19 has put a big spotlight onto how we actually do live our lives, especially in the bigger cities. So I guess we have a generic interest in taking those problems, and part of those world problems as we see it, this is definitely around smart communities and smart cities.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us what a smart community is to you.
Well, smart community to me, that was a really good question. I had a long thought about that. I think to me, a smart community or a smart city is that we're basically creating a space where people want to be in. I think we've gone through this whole process of, you know, building big cities and the concrete blocks and all this stuff. And that was mainly for a purpose of just shoehorning people into a place and, I guess, solve the purpose of trying to produce something or manufacture something. I firmly don't believe it. That's my personal belief. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but I don't believe that people are happy in concrete blocks of a, you know, square meter here and there. I think we need to build spaces that are makes people happy and actually people get back to what they love. And I think a lot of that has to do with solving transportation issues, solving overpopulation, and I think also getting access to a lot better ways of producing food in a much more sustainable way. So in the short answer, it's a very hard way to make a small answer for this, a small short answer, but I think to me it's a livable space. It's a place that you want to be in.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we really need to include that livability aspect in there. But thinking about the work that you do, how does STEM and all the things that, you know, are encompassed in that actually contribute to that as well? So it's not just about, I guess, having this big idealistic view of how things happen, but actually how you actually, you know, apply that and do that. So I'm going to shift from the questions a bit. I'm really keen to know, how are you the CEO of STEMpunks? How did it come to be? And what's the vision of STEMpunks?
Yeah, so STEMpunks is a fairly young company. I started the company back in 2017. And I think that this came to a point in my life where I spent those years building businesses and I guess taking a lot of ideas into creating value for people. And I realized that, you know, in being part of startup mentoring and trying to get, you know, adults and kids to produce good value for people, the issue I saw was that there's not a lack of ideas. There was a lack of a skill set to take those ideas to transform value, I guess, into value for people. So based on that, I said, look, I need to teach kids and adults how to do this. And I guess not just become innovative, but how to use their skills in STEM and entrepreneurial thinking to really transform ideas into value. So that's where STEMpunks came from. I think we've always been part of, we're really strong on trying to get a mindset through here based on innovation, creativity, and entrepreneurship. And what we mean by that is that, you know, coding taught in isolation, robotics taught in isolation, it doesn't really hit the mark in my books. I think all of those things are great tools that we can use, but it's just a tool. We have to put it in the biggest perspective of real world problems, cultures, creating equity in the world for everyone. So it goes beyond those tools and toys. So once again, a very long answer to a very short question. I think what STEMpunks is there to do is to enable that mindset, to enable tomorrow's innovators, to inspire kids to take a pathway into STEM. Because if you look at the problems that we're currently facing as a human species, I think a lot of those problems has to be solved through STEM-related skills. So that's the foundation of what we do.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was just recording the Ask Zoe Anything podcast before this one, but I was asked a similar question and you've put it much more eloquently than I did, but it's also the work that I've been doing at the moment with the university. It's how do we shift and change that narrative that STEM is not just, oh, well, I really like computers or I'm really good at math or, you know, I'm a nerd or whatever. It's actually how do we solve these big problems that we've sometimes created in the world and sometimes we're, you know, continuing to input into, but then we are the ones that are going to solve those as well. And I think I really like what you said about tools and, it, you know, coding in isolation is fine, but it's actually not going to solve the big problems. I love that because it's actually being about more holistic and that application, the real world application side of things as well, which is another thing that the research that I've been doing has really brought about that. That's what university students and employers and everybody else, because you're not necessarily going to, you'll have your own business or you'll work for somebody else, or, you know, you'll have multiple businesses or you'll work for multiple people. That's what they're looking for, that real world application, because we've got these big, wicked, ugly, I don't like to say ugly, big, wicked problems. Sometimes they are ugly though, that we need to solve. And I totally agree with you that STEM has a huge role in that, a massive role in that. When we're talking about STEM, people talk a lot about STEAM. What are your thoughts on STEAM?
So I think with acronyms, and I think it becomes a bit complicated because if you then say STEAM, do you then going to say e-STEAM because if you got the entrepreneurship, and where do you then stop in terms of innovation and creativity? So, you know, we're called STEMpunks for a very, very simple reason. STEM is at the core of what we do, and STEMpunks is a lot easier to trademark than STEAMpunks.
Yep.
So when I get asked that question, like I get asked that question a lot, people say, look, okay, you're STEMpunks. What happened to the arts?
Yes.
I'm going, look, everything we do is based on design thinking. Everything we do is based on creating and making beautiful things and solving problems for people. So I think I've got a very strong opinion about that because I get reminded about that quite often. And the short answer is, I think once we start doing those acronyms, where do you start and where do you stop? I think it's much easier to talk about the mindset and what you're trying to do in a more of a, I guess, educational level rather than getting stuck on three or four letters.
No, I totally agree with you, and great answer. Because similar thing happens with SMART, right? SMART cities, SMART communities. And yes, I did shift from SMART city to SMART community because I wanted to be more inclusive. But then, yeah, where does the shift end? You know, oh, is it intelligent communities? Is it, you know, just communities? Is it just good planning? And it's actually the why behind. And so, yeah, no, great answer. And I think that's, it's really important. And also the whole point of what you're, not that I want to put words in your mouth, but of what you're trying to do here is to have that more, you know, holistic design thinking, like you were saying. So it's like, well, this is the foundation, but yes, of course you need these other things on top of that. And I imagine that the people involved in your, in the activities that you do, the projects you do, are not all just coders, right? They can't be. You would have so many different people. Tell us about that.
Yes. I mean, the one thing I did when I started this business was to really look around and say, okay, who are our target customers? And in this case, we started off with teachers and educators in schools all around the world, and now also dealing with kids from home. And you're very true. The first thing I did was say, well, hang on, I'm an engineer. I'm starting an education business and I'm not an educator. Now, I've learned how to become an educator, but the first thing I did was to employ the best possible educators around. Because in the end, education, being a teacher, it's a trade. It's absolutely a skill you get taught how to do, how to manage a class, and most importantly, how do you create content that delivers really rich learning outcomes? So the short answer is that, you know, as a business person, always think about what you're really good at, but even more importantly, look at what you're not so good at. So in my case, all about surrounding myself with extremely passionate people. Now, they all have an education background because that's the main focus of our business, so either primary or secondary school teachers. But what they are really good communicators. They can strike a balance between tremendously good learning outcomes and also being good entertainers to making the content we do really interesting for kids to immerse themselves into.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Tell us about the things that you do.
Yeah, sure. So StemPunks, currently we do a lot of work with schools. That could be smaller engagements around incursion where kids might learn around a specific STEM tool. It might be around virtual reality, augmented reality, but it's still just a tool. We then move those incursions into bigger projects around project-based and problem-based learning. We also do longer innovation entrepreneurship programs where we include things like design thinking, entrepreneurial thinking, and they can go over several days, even several weeks. We also spend a lot of time with teachers, so building really good teacher professional development programs to upskill teachers all around the world. And here in Australia, specifically trying to hit those marks against the curriculum that's just been introduced around digital technologies. That's our core focus. Since COVID-19 too, we've grown a lot in the home market. So providing STEM education to kids all across the country and around the world, and doing that in a way where STEM education is now accessible to everyone. It's not just for the privileged few, it's for everyone that wants to come on board and do this. So two key markets for us, the home market with the kids learning from home, and then of course, schools and teachers.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Can you tell us about some of the, like, I guess, big projects that you've been doing recently? Maybe you had to shift and change because of COVID.
Yeah, so StemPunks went through a really good transformation. The interesting thing here is that our strategy, looking back now 3 years in time, has always been to push into the online space. And if there's one driver for innovation that makes things happen, that's necessity. So I think in April here now, last year was massive for us. We grew really fast. We won the Telstra Business Awards. We did really well, growing team. But we got a bit lost in the trap of doing a lot of face-to-face communication engagements in the schools, which was good for us because we grew the business, we grew the team, but we didn't focus too much on the online space. So since April now, we launched, well, basically end of April, we launched what we call our StemPunks Live. It was an 8-week 24 episodes of live engagements with teachers and STEM topics to schools all across Australia. And we did that for free. And we did that for two reasons. First of all, schools needed content to be delivered remotely. So it was the right thing to do to give back to the community. But I think also we had to learn tremendously fast. And we did that. During those 8 weeks, we built up a fantastic production quality online classes that we're now producing pretty much every day here from Sanford in Brisbane. And the online space is a really big growing space for us. And I think it comes back to our mission too, which has always been to inspire tomorrow's innovators, but doing that in a way that everyone can access our content. So what online does for us is that we can now still apply our teacher skills, being really good educators, but doing that for the masses in a very rich way. So yeah, online is a big growing pathway for us.
That's really exciting. And I think, I mean, it makes sense to be online, but I can see the face-to-face was, 2019 was all about face-to-face, let's be honest. And then, yeah, moving to 2020, it's been really interesting because I had a lot of engagements face-to-face and then shifted to online and then the things that you can do. But then I think you really value the face-to-face even more, right? But it also really legitimized the online space, which I think is a really important, I guess, distinction of moving forward into this smart community space, because I think people often, I guess, get lost of that it has to be one or the other. We've seen what it's like when it's only the other or, you know, only one digital. But really to thrive in our smart communities, we need, and I talk about human, digital and physical connection. Being able to travel, is that physical, digital, obviously, fairly self-explanatory. But I think human, you can get from both being digital, but also physical in person. And we worked out that most of, our businesses can survive during that time. Actually, a lot can't as well, which was also a huge learning and something we, I guess, need to acknowledge. Because I think sometimes when we're only talking to other people that have knowledge-based businesses, we often get caught in, oh, well, wasn't this an interesting, even great time to be online? But actually, there's lots of other things that need to feed into that and lots of other businesses that need support during this time and continue to need support or, have to shift and change. And I think that's where the skill set thing comes into it as well. It's like having those skills that you can apply to different situations. So, just because I'm an engineer and actually road construction back in the day, a civil environmental engineer, doesn't mean that that's all I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And I think as a young person, I think that's really important because I think we can kind of go, oh, well, I'm doing this now and this is all I'm ever going to do. That can be really overwhelming, but also just like, oh, well, I accept that that's very, I guess, blinker thinking. Just like, you've got blinkers on, you're going straight ahead. So I think I am really passionate about that, I guess, holistic thinking or teaching, like ingraining that from a very early age. And I'm wondering whether, the stuff you're doing with young people, if there's a market for, I'm thinking about local government, for example, like actually building skill sets within those, like, I guess, non-traditional tech roles that are going to be more and more automated, have more and more technology in the future.
Yes. I mean, we're living in an interesting time and space because, I think for the first time here, and this might have been going on for a while, so we're no longer limited by technology. It's always been this thing, we have to do it later because we don't have technology to make that happen. Well, we do. You look at things like autonomous cars, they already exist. What we lack is the ability to cope with how they should fit into our society. It's more about a mind shift and enabling, I guess, a new way of thinking about the things that we do. And I think that's what COVID-19 did too, hopefully, is that it sort of shook people up to the point where they say, look, maybe we can rethink how we do things. And I guess coming back to your question about how government and they can get involved a lot more in these sort of areas, I think when we go forward now, people look at STEM especially and look at, okay, AI, you look at automation, it's all scary stuff, it's going to take our jobs. And I think there's always two sides to that. You can always use technology for good or for bad. But I think what technology to me will do, and I'm very excited about this, I think it will actually allow human beings to be what they always should have been, which is basically focusing on what they want to do as people. Because you meet someone at a barbecue and you say, okay, what do you do? And they say, okay, I'm an accountant, I'm a lawyer. And then you sort of dig behind and say, like, what are you really passionate about? And they start thriving and they go, wow, I'll do this on the weekend. I'll play guitar, I'll do this thing as a volunteer. Those are the areas we should allow people to do. Yes, there's functions here that needs to be done as a lawyer or a banker. Don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of jobs that we're just basically wasting life on, things like transportation, for example. I think there's a lot of wasted time doing those things. And in terms of very monotone work, in terms of manufacturers, industry, like, there's a lot of stuff that can be taken away and create new opportunities. It's the same thing I think happened back in the day when cars took away the work from the horse manufacturer, I guess the horse industry. Everyone in the horse industry was really up in arms because, cars are going to kill the world, everything's going to be bad. And I guess in the end, that never happened. We created new jobs, new industries to flourish around that. In the end, I think that probably was a better way of doing things. So how can then government get involved with this? But I guess what I'm coming to is that is not just about technology. I think what we got to focus on is the human aspects of what we do here and really putting the human being in the center. Like coming back to what you said first, what is a smart community, smart city to you? To me, it's a place where people want to be, where people can thrive. And I believe technology is a massive enabler to make that happen, to take away the stuff we don't need, to optimize and make things feasible in terms of population, solving things like transportation issues, sanitation issues, water problems. All those things can be solved with technology and STEM skills. And I think in the end, it then allows people to get more in touch with themselves and really do what they want to do with their lives.
Yeah. And I've been doing on those particular things, and I'm doing a lot of research in that space. It's like the structure, how do we set up this structure so then we can actually have more time to be doing the things that, you know, leisure, you know, buying back leisure time is what I talk about sometimes with technology. But you can only do that if you've got the skill set enough to, and also the mindset enough to be able to shift and change and adapt, but also know what you're, like you were talking about before, working out what you are good at and, you know, what you, someone else can do. Yeah. But then also not just swapping money for time is also an important thing. But I think being able to really operate in this future of work where overwork is not glorified, it's actually, you know, we glorify being able to have time to ourselves and be able to do things. I think that's really important, or glamorize, I should say, not glorify. Glamorize this, you know, overwork. Oh, well, I work, you know, this much. I think it's changing, but I think there's still this expectation that 9 to 5 you're online. But then sometimes now it's 24/7, right? And I think those skill sets of digital etiquette, digital hygiene are going to be even more important in the future. But I think what we need to, I guess, that holistic viewpoint of, you know, STEM and all these things, if you've got those skill sets, you know how you can apply those, and then you can do the things that you want to do. Well, as work is one thing, but then also have that leisure time and feel comfortable about having that leisure time, not just, you know, waiting till you're retired. I think that'll be a really interesting shift.
Oh, definitely. And coming back to the thing you said about retirement, I think it's such a flawed concept saying that you're going to stress out your whole life until you retire and then you're going to relax when you turn 65. I mean, that's just such a flawed concept. I mean, why would you waste all your life doing that and then bank on you're going to be healthy and have enough cash to live your life the way you want it when you turn 65? That doesn't make any sense at all. Such an old way of looking at things. And I think such an outdated way of looking at life as well. You know, I think the older you get, the more you realize that life is very short and you need to make the most of that. And I think allowing people to do what they're passionate about, it's such an important thing. And I think STEM can play a really big role in that and solving those issues.
Yeah, I agree. And that was another catchphrase of mine, is you can't eat passion forever. Whereas if you've got that STEM as a foundation, and then whatever foundation is, maybe it's something, and you know, different, then you can really build on that. And, you know, you can be employed whatever shape that looks like, right? You know, whether you're an entrepreneur, you have your own business, you work for somebody else part-time, you work for someone else another part-time, et cetera, et cetera. But having that base, so then you can actually, yeah, shift and change and do those things that you're not only passionate about, but is in your skill set as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think also the whole education space here is that, especially around STEM too, it's very easy to look at STEM as, oh, STEM is coding, STEM is robotics, STEM is not, you know. The mindset, you look at things like design thinking, critical thinking especially. We're living in a world where you have to learn tremendously fast and learn in a way that you pretty much do that every day to grow. Mm. But at the same time, as you learn, you got to assess and critical think what is right and what is wrong and what is true. I think there's been very recent examples of how critical thinking is really important just across the ditch in terms of the US election, for example. I mean, that's a very important point there to understand what is real and what is not. So to me, and this comes back to your acronym again, I mean, where do you start with STEM? I do think, though, that STEM as a fundamental skill set going forward is critical, because a lot of the issues that we are facing relies on those skills to build the societies of the future that allows other things to flourish even more. Art is a big part of that, yes, but I believe that art is a tremendous outcome from that. I think when people get their passion involved in what they do and they can make choices based on passion, not what I need to do, that comes by itself. I think that just releases all that energy we sort of stored up under so many years that we can now do what we love to do. So Yes. Stay away from STEM is coding. Think about this more in a holistic way. And I think look at global problems rather than just looking at what's happening in our own backyard. I mean, there's so many issues here that relates to culture, relates to how we communicate across the borders. So, yeah, I can talk about this all day. I'm going to stop there. Hope it makes sense.
Totally makes sense. And yeah, I agree. It's something that it's about changing that narrative. And again, it's a little bit of the work I've been doing as well, is changing that narrative to that it's not just a boring thing in the corner that somebody does. It's inputting into real world problems. And I agree. Yeah, art is an outcome of that, but also that you can embrace so many different parts of you. Like, you don't have to be just one. I'm a math science person. I do this. You can be one and all. And I think, for me, my creative outlet is this podcast, but I'm not just a podcaster, right? I'm a consultant. I'm an engineer. I do these things. I'm a speaker. And I think if we can really embrace those bits that we really want to do and we can focus in on that. And, it takes a bit of mind. I don't know what the word is, compartmentalizing in your brain. Like, oh, today this is what I'm doing. But actually you bring in, here's you in the middle, but you bring in all these other bits, because if I wasn't a podcaster, then I wouldn't be able to bring in those insights to my consulting business and vice versa. Like, I might talk to somebody during my consulting, a project or something like that. Oh, that's really interesting. You should come on the podcast, and vice versa. So I think we need to compartmentalizing, even though I said it myself, but it's actually bring all of those bits to you. But then when you have to focus in on, okay, well, I'm podcasting today, so this stuff can go over here, but I'm doing this even for 5 minutes, half an hour, 30 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. So I think and I think if we continue to build that narrative a bit more, that we can be more than one thing, but we don't have to be everything to everybody, which is really important, I think, because you're a podcaster. Oh, can you do this, this, and this? I'm like, oh, actually, I don't do that part. This is, I do the interviews or whatever it is. So I think that's an important distinction as well. And I think once we start learning and that lifelong education you were talking about as well, you can pick up things and build that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think lifelong learning is what we need. And people often ask me, what people do you look for to come and join your business? And even though we're looking for really good educators and good communicators, it comes back to the passion you have. And I think also how willing you are to learn. I wake up every day probably knowing about 10% of what I need to achieve that day. And learning is just part of what I need to do. And I think if you're going to be competitive going forward, you've got to be able to learn and critically think about what you're doing. So yes, definitely agree.
Okay, let's move to the future now. And let's talk about some of the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough.
Yes. So I can hit one, see if it fits in. So artificial intelligence. We talk a lot about that. We toss that around a little bit. But what actually is it? I don't think people realize how much artificial intelligence actually they use every single day of their life. So artificial intelligence, if I ask someone, what do you think that is? They probably see some sort of Terminator robot taking over the world with some sort of Skynet in the back there to sort of suss out who we are and become smarter than people. But I think there's a lot of opportunity with artificial intelligence, but I think at the same time, there's a big education piece for people to understand what it is and how it can be applied.
Yeah, yeah. I think the application is so important because, we use it every day in our lives, and it's not something to be afraid of. It's something we can shape, and if we get involved, we can shape it, right? And, having more diversity behind the code, we can have more diversity in front of the code. I've been saying that a lot lately. But then you can actually understand what it is and what it isn't, and you can easily explain it to people as well. Because I think there is a lot of hype that goes with, all the different buzzwords, and we get excited about certain things at certain times, or we get scared of things at certain times and, everything's, terrible or whatever. But like you said earlier, tech can be used for good or bad, but I actually think it can be used for both at the same time, unintentionally or intentionally, which I think is something we need to talk more about. It's like, it's not good, bad. It's life, right? And we need to have more people involved so we can think about all the different scenarios, think about bringing those different experiences that people have that will be affected by, decisions we're making with machine learning or whatever. And, it's been interesting. I've been doing some machine learning and, lots of algorithms, but also the application of it has been really exciting, even though, I didn't know how to code before. So that was a very, very steep learning curve and freaked me out because I'm used to, you know, I do things that I'd be relatively good at. But anyway, I made it. I learned, taught myself. Well, the teachers taught me, I should say. We got there. But actually what I was really interested in is the application. So, you know, we were designing a new index for the depth of anesthetic for, you know, patients under operation. And so then you could measure more effectively whether they're awake or asleep and monitor and measure that. The other one that I really was interested in was detecting epileptic episodes before they happen based on brain activity and having a model to, you know, and if you can get it to be quick enough, energy efficient enough that you could have it as a wearable or an implant that then can notify a person or a carer that an epileptic episode is about to happen. You know, there's so many applications for this, but then also we want other people that aren't just super involved in the code to actually start asking the questions around how this would work. What are the privacy things that need to go into place, security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's so many things, but if you think that you're not, if you can't get involved in machine learning because you're not a coder, then you can't ask those questions or you feel like you're not invited into that conversation. And I think that's what Smart Communities has to be about is giving permission for people to get in and bring their skill set into this, into the mix.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at innovation as a whole, diversity gets tossed around as a word that we feel like we have to include, but diversity is key in any innovation process. I mean, projects I've been involved with, anything from building multi-million dollar companies to even small ideas coming to fruition, it all comes back to having different kinds of input. Mm. And I think when you talk about things like AI and machine learning, is very easy to get very technical. And it gets very technical very quickly when you start looking at that. But having people then who questions these things from an application point of view, who looks at the more human factors of application, is critical because once you get too technical about these things, you tend to forget about the human elements. You take a thing like autonomous cars that no doubt is using a lot of machine learning algorithms behind the scenes to make sure we can figure out how a car can drive itself. So I firmly believe that if we swapped all the cars in the world tomorrow morning to autonomous cars, I reckon you'll see a death rate that'll decrease by probably 99%. I'm making this up on the go, yes, but I'm trying to make an example here. I think that would be the case, but we're still not comfortable with that 0.1%, that car who killed that person. It was the car who killed the person, not the driver. So once again, our society is not set up to tackle that. Anything from insurance to legal issues, we can't resolve that. So in that case, do we then abort the whole AI and the whole autonomous driving concept because we now drastically reduce the death by maybe 90%? No, we can't. We need to come to grips with how that actually works in our society. What are the ethical dilemmas with that? What are the human impacts of doing something like that? In the end, I think if you all agree, if we can reduce fatalities on the roads by 99%, I think we should do that. But then we should tackle the more human factors around that point when that machine is killing that person. How do we tackle that? So I think it's easy to get deep in technology, but I think it's more interesting getting deep into the philosophy and the human factors behind how technology can be used.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. And obviously autonomous vehicles is was a hot topic. It's kind of, you know, we're in the trough of disillusionment, I think, on the hype curve. And I've had a lot of people on the podcast talking about autonomous vehicles, particularly Michael Milford comes to mind. And, you know, he will talk about that we're not quite there yet, you know, in real world, you know, application. I guess the transition period is something that's going to be the most dangerous time, right? But also that there's already applications of it happening now and that we could learn from those. And I think that's an important, but, you know, if we can't get to the full thing straight away, but what can we learn and what can we do in the meantime? And I also think there's going to be some interesting conversations about when it's unethical to not like to have a human driver. Like there's going to be this distinction. It's like I often think about it's no longer good enough to be wasting resources purely because that's the way we've always done it. And I think more and more conversations like that will continue to happen and are already happening. And so, yeah, it'll be really interesting. And I love having these conversations where we can, no one knows everything, but actually having these human real application conversations about where we want to go, because eventually we will have to be having these conversations when something's really happened. And if we've started doing that thinking already, I think that's going to be really powerful and actually looking at some of those negative impacts, but then also the positives.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think also that, you know, fear is a very, very bad driver for change. I think education is a much better one because it's always easy to point a finger. It's a lot harder to point a finger and come up with a solution. I think I can get very passionate about autonomous cars too. I think once you start embracing that and actually see how it works, it's a no-brainer. Like we've got an autonomous car here that we play around with and we take out and show kids how they actually work. And the first time you put that in full autonomous mode and it starts steering itself and avoiding cars. And I think I've been in situations where actually the car's taken off by itself because someone's trying to ram in the back. It is a bit of a scary feeling when it first happens, but then it actually makes a lot of sense. And I think also when you drive around and you see people looking at their phones and they're swirling all around the road, and you know, I think autonomous vehicles probably the way forward. I can create a very, very passionate conversation against that as well. But having a car that I can charge with solar panels now, it takes me about 6 hours to charge it up, full tank, just done by solar. It works fine. But I think this whole thing about fear and that combined with a lack of critical thinking, that's very dangerous. I think in Australia, we're still very good at having heated debates, but based on debates that we can acknowledge that we've got different opinions. We've seen examples lately where that's not really allowed. You either say this is black or this is white. And in the end, that's the only two standpoints you can have. You know, if we're going to solve the problems of the world, we need to have robust discussions where we disagree, because out of that comes really good solutions. And we might learn something from that as well. Mm. So, yes.
Mm. No, I totally agree. I think the polarization in the world, no matter what side of the fence you sit on, and what do we have to sit on a side all the time, and that we can't shift and change. I think that's really, anyway, we could probably talk about this for hours. It's something I am also, yeah, we talk about a lot. If you have this opinion, then you have to be this. If you have this opinion, you have to be that. And it's, no, we're complex beings. I totally agree with you.
I think when someone disagrees with me, the first thing that pops in my head is that this is an opportunity to learn or maybe not learn, but at least I'm open to the conversation to understand what the different opinion is. I think that's a skill we have to really get, you know, kids and people to understand. That's a very valuable skill to have, because otherwise you're not going to go forward.
Yep.
You dig your hole and that's it.
Mm, agreed. Okay, two more questions very quickly. What are some of your favorite smart community resources? And I put this question, and I think it's a bit confusing, but just some of the resources, so some of the people you listen to or follow, or some of the things you read on a daily basis, maybe tell people about your magazine, actually, would be a good one too.
Okay, there's two here. And I must admit, Zoe, that this whole thing about, you know, smart communities, smart cities, we've been running this future city program within STEMpunks for about a year now, but getting to talk to you like we did now a couple of months back and understand what you're doing, you are an inspiration for this. That's the first one I was going to say, is that I've learned a lot more about what smart cities and smart communities can be. And I think that really inspired us to take this into schools and do a lot more with this. That's the first one. Now, I should put a plug in here too. I think the work that we do, go and check us out at stempunks.com.au. We've got a future learning magazine that we're putting out every month, which is trying to pick all those global problems around the world and put that into context of STEM education. So in there, we talked about sustainability, which was a lot around, so as part of that, a lot around sustainable cities and communities. But we're also launching a lot of projects next year around citizen science. So basically, how can we apply science in the communities to solve problems, not just wait for the big companies to solve it for us? There's a lot we can do as individuals and human beings to make a better world around us. So those will be the two top picks on my list, Zoe.
Well, thank you very much. And yes, I very much enjoyed being part of that, and then also reading about what all the other people are doing as well. And yeah, I feel very privileged to be a part of that edition on sustainability. Okay, last question. It's been so great to chat with you. I've really, really enjoyed this, and I feel like we could have many, many a conversation, and I'm hoping that we can in the future, of course, and maybe we can even collaborate, or we've already started, you know, it's all happening. So last question, very easy. How can people connect with you?
Oh, so personally, just get me on LinkedIn. Look at Michael Holmstrom at LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect with people, happy to talk to you. I love great conversations like this one today. If you want to know more about STEMpunks and what we do, go to stempunks.com.au and check us out and see all the amazing stuff we do here in Australia and also around the world.
Yes, very exciting. Well, thanks again for coming onto the podcast. I really appreciate your time, and yeah, had a great conversation and really looking forward to our next one.
Thank you, Zoe. That was awesome.
Talk soon. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter at SmartComHQ. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.